Hi, everyone.
Hi.
Just wanted to say I thought the first two presentations were really good, and I've never seen someone use clickers in that way. So if you don't mind, I'm going to incorporate it in some extension evaluation in Wisconsin. I'm an evaluation specialist with University of Wisconsin. I work for actually the same place as Vikram. It's called the Environmental Resources Center. It's a joint center between UW Extension and UW-Madison College of Ag. And generally, we evaluate different grants and such from both within our center and external. We get calls from out of state, you know, looking for external evaluators to serve on their grants. So that's what we do. And then part of my role is also building evaluation capacity for UW Extension educators. And that's sort of where this talk comes from, is what have we learned, at least, or what are we promoting at UW around writing impact statements? We have this system called recording results, where everybody reports to at the end of the year, and they're trying to improve it. It's a work in progress. And I'm on a team of a couple people across the state that's trying to figure out how do we improve the quality of what's submitted to that system, you know, because a lot of people want to use it, and we're facing budget cuts right now, and we haven't really been doing a good job reporting and using that information. So again, my role is sort of trying to help increase the quality of what goes into the system in the first place. All right, so this was covered a little bit at the very beginning of the first talk, but what is the relevance of impact statements? Depending on who you are, so how many people in here are private employees, like you work for a company or you don't work for a public institution or agency? Okay, just a couple. Okay, no, that's good for me to know. I tried to think about a broad audience when I crafted this, knowing that not everybody probably has to submit something in the same format, right? Whether it's to your employer or to a grantor or whoever. But we use it to report at the end of the year, but you can also use it for promotion opportunities. And I think that that would be the same across sectors, right? If you have impressive things to say about your work, it's not only about your program and who you're serving, but it says something about you. And of course, if you have grants or contracts, increasingly, you know, people are asking for reporting and for those reports to be more meaningful. I've heard that people are actually starting to get some feedback from granting agencies, not across the board, but on their reports. And I was one of those people in the past that's like, nobody's reading this. I never get any feedback. You know, was it worth, you know, spending all that time on it versus just a couple hours on it? Or, but I think that that's going to become more and more important. And for marketing your program as well. So we have a communications and marketing team at our center, and we've started working with them a lot hand in hand to use this sort of data and findings from our programs. And even, you know, you can even use it in promotional materials if you're trying to get new people to come. If you've got some cool things to say about what you've achieved and why this matters, you know, it can help you actually achieve your goals as well, rather than just measure your goals at the end. And of course, communicating with various audiences. I love the comment earlier on, don't forget about the people you are serving. You know, so a lot of times we see it as reporting to somebody else, somebody higher up. Including the recipients is important, and I've seen it can help increase buy-in as well. And in the evaluation world, there's this term called participatory evaluation. That means you actually involve them in the evaluation. So if you're not just sending them a survey or something, but you're saying, actually, what would program success look like to you? And they can even weigh in on the methods you're going to use. So it's not just us setting the goals and objectives, but you can engage your audience in setting those goals and objectives, and not just this method that's top down from you, but they can actually help say, well, if that's really what you're trying to do, this is how we could measure it. This is what we should measure, and this is how we could. And that's hard to do, but I think it's a good goal for us to work towards. And at the very least, informing them of the background of why you're evaluating, why are you doing all this, and I think it increases motivation a little bit to respond. The Dillman method, which a lot of people in Extension use in terms of survey design, talks a lot about how you want to increase benefits and decrease negatives in any evaluation. So why are you how are you convincing people to participate in your evaluation? And increasing benefits can be things like incentives or just explaining more why you're doing this and trying to get them to care a little bit about it too. And decreasing negatives would be things like, you know, time, relevance, right? You can just sort of think through it. It'll totally depend on your audience, but I like to think about that general advice. This was one that I submitted last year. I just wanted to give at least one or two examples of impact statement, quote unquote. So I will read it. I will say first that after this, we were asked to submit even shorter versions based on our administrators' needs. And so I ended up probably cutting this in half and adding a couple quotes from participants. So depending on the purpose and the use, you know, you can kind of repackage your impact statement a couple different ways. And I actually couldn't find that one when I was prepping for this, but I like that one better because I like the pairing of quantitative and qualitative data. So a lot of people critique your work if you only rely on qualitative. If all you have is a quote from one person and you've done nothing else, you know, people can easily say, well, was that just your biggest fan saying that, right? But I personally think quantitative alone also has huge limitations. It tells you the what, but it doesn't tell you the why or the how. And it doesn't give that personal, you know, feel to it. So this, I'll say that I don't have that qualitative story type of information in this one, but you could easily add it, and I think it's most impressive when it's added with some numbers. So in 2014, over 4,000 producers and advisors in the 12-state North Central region were introduced to the Useful to Usable Projects online decision support tools via in-person outreach events. The project goals are to help producers make better long-term plans on what, when, and where to plant, and also how to manage crops for maximum yields and minimum environmental damage. And then I put a little sentence on our specific role in parentheses there. Between 60 and 73%, it's actually now 80%, of respondents to post-event surveys report being at least somewhat likely to use the tools in their work in the next year. The most popular tool, Corn Growing Degree Day, can help inform seed purchasing and other growing season decisions. I included that part to kind of get at that longer term, like why does it matter that they would use Corn Growing Degree Day tool. There were 331 new users from Wisconsin. This was an impact statement to Wisconsin, which is why I pulled that out, even though if we were reporting on the whole 12-state region, you know, I would have not included that. And 5,677 users from all geographic areas in 2014, according to Google Analytics. In addition, about 100 educators across the region have signed up for a project sales kit to spread the word about the tools. We'll know more about project impact in 2015-16. So the big limitation of this one is that we don't have that longer-term data, right? But it does go a little bit beyond outputs. Outputs would just be number of people we trained. And, you know, I'm not sure if number of people that visited your site would also be an output. It's kind of like in between output and outcome to me, because it's actually they had to do something as a result of going. But if you just say I trained 20 people, it doesn't say anything about was it good, bad, what happened because of that. So we're getting a little bit at it with that quote about the percentage of people that said that they're likely to use a tool, which is going back to that intention, that behavioral intention is what you can measure when you have people in the room. You know, which could be stronger depending on your purposes than just asking about knowledge gained when they're in the room with you. But again, we need to wait for our longer term measures and some time to pass to figure out who's actually used them and have they used the tools to aid decision making. So we have our longer term goals outlined, and that's how this will get better when I write this again in about a year. So I'm not saying this is perfect, I just wanted to give an example of what this can look like. And again, you could add a quote, you could shorten this up. We were just at the American Evaluation Conference in Chicago last week, and something that a woman named Stephanie Evergreen, she does a lot of data visualization and reporting work, is recommending is that we actually start these things with the main finding or the recommendation and work backwards. So we're all trained in this way of writing technical reports and research, you know, journal articles, introduction, methods, results, discussion. She's like, flip that, right? People will probably start reading the beginning, they may or may not finish reading, whether this is a report or whether it's an impact statement. I mean, this already looks kind of long. When I put it on the slide, I'm like, am I really going to read that to people? So that's something to think about. And I think I didn't have that lens when I wrote this a year ago, but I think at least in the first sentence, I tried to kind of get to the point and then talk about the purpose of the project versus giving this lengthy description up front about this team consists of these people and we did this stuff and then what happened. So just think about that potential to flip what we're used to, what we're used to in terms of the order of our writing. This was not an impact statement for a statewide system or anything like that. It was just for a poster we presented at a conference. It was part of the Great Lakes Regional Water Program a few years ago. It was one of a seed grant initiative that was funded through that multi-state program, and I thought it might be an example relevant to this audience. So this one is not flipped. You know, it goes from background to activities to results, which I think is a typical way of succinctly reporting things in extension, at least. And the first bullet under results really is impact. And this is a rare project where we were able to get at that, and we didn't collect that data. The Midwest Cover Crops Council, who we were working with, had pulled that from other sources. But it still took some thought and energy and planning for them to get a hold of that and, you know, get it at the level that made sense for where they were working. So this is ideal in that sense, that when we say impact in the evaluation world, we actually mean that far right side of the logic model. So there's actually an issue, at least at UW Extension, that we call these end-of-year reporting impact statements. There's maybe one, two people, or nobody that's actually reporting impact, right? But I try not to focus on that too much. Impact, I think, in layman's terms, is more just results, right? But if you really want to think about impact, it's that first bullet. What are the changes to society, environmental conditions, economic impacts because of your work? What is the so what? So we reached 12,000 people. The website had this many page views. We leveraged a bunch of other funding. And we continued to work with other partners to address policy issues. For what purpose? Who cares? Right? And that's what many people say is the actual impact, is that real end goal, which is obviously harder to measure as well. And just a side note, until I came to Extension, I had never seen someone use funding as an outcome. Just a thought. We think that leveraged funding is an outcome. And maybe it is because of different reporting, right, that people have to do who work for universities and such. But I would say from the public's perspective or from an outside perspective, because I came into this from public health, I worked for a nonprofit, and that made no sense to me. So that might be appropriate for certain audiences, but maybe you can just consider that as well based on who you're communicating with. So I tried to break this down into steps. I think there's only five or six. It's not too long. Step one is actually have something to say. And I was really happy with the order of these presentations because I think the first three speakers actually got at what are the steps in doing evaluation, planning and doing evaluation, and a couple of specific examples from Vikram with a distance ed and also the clickers. So I'm not going to get into that. That's like a whole separate training. We've already heard about that. But I completely loved the points about how it does take planning. A quote that I've been thinking a lot about lately that someone I know keeps telling me is, we don't plan to fail, we fail to plan. And I thought that was so true in the earlier presentations. So have something to say. That actually encompasses evaluation planning and implementation in the first place. I like this five steps up here. This was created by the UW Extension Program Development and Evaluation Team, which is actually separate from us. A lot of people think that that's where Vikram and I work. And I like it. It's simple. It's the five steps in actually planning and doing evaluation, which is what I'm not really focusing on in this talk. But I'll point out a couple things. Engaging stakeholders goes across the whole thing, right? So that's key to all of it. Step two is focus. I would say this is where most problems happen that I've observed with evaluation. Either people try to do everything and then we get burned out and we're just measuring all this stuff and it doesn't feel meaningful. Or we skip that step. We might make a logic model, but it doesn't seem useful to anybody. It's like you're just creating it just to create it, but it's not actually being used. And I think part of that is our fault of the format in which we've created that logic model. It's just a big box. So I would encourage people to use arrows and really think about, for your own good, what am I doing that's leading to what? And that whole box on assumptions, at the bottom of a logic model is really important. You can use your evaluation to test the assumptions. So if you assumed that this leads to this, you can ask participants questions that get at that, and you can test your own logic. And then you can kind of redesign or tweak. So I think so far we treat that assumptions box just to list things that we have no control over. But any arrow in your program logic is an assumption. So you can list things there in that box and you can think about that. But also you can consider every link as an assumption. If I do this, I will get this. And the logic model that just has the big boxes doesn't facilitate that type of thinking. It just facilitates people dumping words in those boxes. So something to say, a few other presenters touched on this. The difference between an output could be number of people trained. An outcome, I generally think of as knowledge or behavior gains, maybe a change in skill. And an impact can be seen as the longer-term goal. A lot of people write goals in more of a short-term fashion, and maybe then you wouldn't consider that an impact. Again, you can think about different levels when you think about impacts. So what the people running our recording results system in Wisconsin have been saying, that this is actually not a system just for accountability purposes. They actually said that the prime purpose of it is to explain versus persuade. So a few different purposes of communication would be explaining, persuading, entertaining. And they said, our system is more about explaining. You guys don't have to worry about writing this in terms of like persuading legislators. Apparently that's for the communications people to do once they've read what's in the system. They want us to be thinking about it as, what impact did you have in the community? Okay, that's good. That's like what people normally think about in terms of impact. But what about impact on your program or impact for your colleagues? So what did we learn? What did we tweak for our program, with the idea being that this is a system for people to learn, not just that someone else uses and then reports it out, you know, to some funder and some report that nobody else ever sees. And that's going to require everybody changing the way they think about this reporting. If this is for us to use too, we're actually going to go, they're teaching people how to go in and search the system, and if that's going to happen, you know, it's going to require some training and people really buying into that idea that we're going to use this for our own learning purposes. And I think with organizations as big as State Extension Services and others that some of you probably represent, that there is a lot of potential for that learning. You don't necessarily know what everybody else is doing and the tweaks that they've made based on what they've learned and all that. So that's that. So I just wanted everybody to reflect for a minute, maybe just 20 seconds or so, and just think from this step one, do you already have something to say? Just think about one initiative you're working on. If yes, which one? If no, what could you do drawing from earlier presentations and or other knowledge that you already have about evaluation in order to have something to say? Step two I have as focus/mindset. So know your purpose. Is it for accountability? Is it for learning? Which types of impacts are you reporting? We've been told at UW that they're not going to tell us who the audience is. The audience could be many people. And so we're supposed to write it in the way that we think would be useful. And the idea is that they'll be able to find what they need by by searching the system in various ways, which was really hard for me to wrap my head around. Usually you're told you have to know your audience when you write, and I guess the idea is that you might know it when you're writing, but they're not going to say at a prescriptive level, this system is for reporting to funders, or this system is for, you know, writing press releases to people of the state of Wisconsin. And of course, some of you might have specific guidelines that you need to keep in mind. Like our impact statements are supposed to be 250 words. Or certain required sections if you do a longer one. You know, background, outputs, outcomes, whatever it is. Step three would be brainstorming. And this could just be thinking or jotting down a few notes. I mentioned flipping the scientific report, if that's allowable. Just think about the main points of what you'd want to get across. Finding recommendation being most key, and methods and background information probably being included. And what level of complexity, you know, I agree with the general advice to just avoid, you know, acronyms and hard to understand stuff, not really knowing who might read it, and probably not including detailed statistics like p-values and such. I don't think people need to see that in the level of an impact statement. Let's see here. So I think we have 2 minutes. I would actually like to do this step. If you could turn to the people in your row, just share preliminary brainstorm about what you might write about. And it doesn't have to be thinking about some annual reporting system. Could be any communication purpose, just an idea you have of, I would write about this project or this result or what you would like to, and just get some really quick feedback from them, maybe let them ask you one question about it, and listen to what they ask you, because it's really valuable to actually hear what somebody says as you're brainstorming. I'm going to let you all do that, and I'll probably cut it off in about 2 minutes just so I can get through some of the last slides after that. Okay, in the interest of time, we will move on here. So probably got about 3 or 4 more minutes here to wrap up. The next step would be actually writing a draft. And when I went through this process at one point, they actually had us share both at the brainstorm stage and at the writing a draft stage. And I think that's important because we all get lost, at least I do, in our own little world. And how do you actually, the part about verbally sharing what you're writing down to me makes the writing so much easier and clearer. Some people might be better at writing than verbal, but I think just combining the two helps you to do either of them in a better way. So first draft, don't be intimidated by this step, just do it. I'm kind of intimidated by writing, so this step is hard for me. I usually just wait until the day before reporting's due and then write it. And our whole point in Wisconsin is we don't have to teach people what to write. Like, stop getting hung up on exactly who is this for, what do they think matters, right? So then we know kind of what to talk about. It's not about teaching people what to write, it's teaching people how to write, which a lot of that, I've been told at least, is just giving people space to write. You know, because everybody's busy, so you're not really taking time maybe every 3 months or even every 6 months to just jot down some ideas or write a draft and bounce it by a colleague, whatever it is. And when I did a workshop that led us through this, we only wrote a draft for 10 minutes. You know, I think in my head I always think, oh, writing it's going to take so long, and therefore I'll just procrastinate. But really it was 10 minutes. I wrote out almost a whole page, just handwritten. And then step 5 was practice on a colleague. Just what you did just now, except you're actually reading your draft. And for me at least, when I read my draft out loud, I already knew by the time I got to the second line that I needed to majorly change the way I had set it up, and get their feedback, and you can, you know, both do it so that it's mutually beneficial. You can give each other feedback. And then step 6 is refine and submit. So what I think is essential to this is knowing why you're writing this in the first place, even if you don't know your audience specifically. Make your point upfront and clearly, take appropriate level of credit, right? Acknowledge team members, don't say we definitively know this is because of our program if you don't, but also don't be shy to take credit for something. A lot of people in Wisconsin are very shy about taking credit for their work, like very, very scared to take credit for something. And I think we undervalue ourselves a lot in extension work, at least. And it has to be timely, right? So if somebody could really use this information and you can do 80% of a good enough job, but get it to them in time, that's better than, right, making it perfect and it's not there when it needs to be. Recommended, I talked about mixed methods. So if you can answer the what was accomplished, but also the why or how with some of those more open-ended or qualitative methods, that would be nice. Iterative, we talked about working with your stakeholders on evaluation. And, you know, your organization might have existing priorities that you can speak into if that's appropriate. You know, like this work is related to resilient and productive environments or whatever, to set it in the right context, the language that certain people care about at least. And I'm going to really breeze through the section, but it's evaluation use is not just about impact statements, right? So if this has sort of seemed irrelevant to you so far, I just wanted to touch on how you can really just think about evaluation use more broadly. So you can talk about your results with people and get their interpretations. When I try to interpret data, it's generally not the same interpretation as if we ask a stakeholder to give their spin on what this means. And at the evaluation conference last week, there was a presentation on having data parties. You know, it sounds a little bit lame, but it could be fun, right? And it's actually creating time to think about the data we've collected and put some meaning onto it. There's also what we're doing a lot these days is these 1 to 4 page, what I call evaluation briefs, a summary of what was learned, not in a paragraph form like an impact statement, but maybe in a graphically designed 1-pager, 2-pager. And another thing presented last week at the eval conference was this rule, and of course, give or take a little bit, of 1, 3, and 25. You can do a 1-page high-level summary, a 3-page executive summary, and maximum a 25-page report. And anything that doesn't fit in the 25-page report, you include as an appendix. So really forcing yourself to be succinct, which is so hard for us to do, but it puts the burden on us versus on our reader. And then you can use those short and sweet documents to use in a meeting. So this one, for example, this is what we use to present the data back to the client, instead of what we usually use, some big long Word document, and we're kind of like, okay, rushing through it because we never have enough time, or okay, now jump to page 6 and all that. So we forced ourselves to distill it down, worked with one of our graphic designers to do this, and then used this when we presented it back to the person who cared about this data or people that cared about it. I'm really almost done now. This is just a different example of a 1-pager we've used in more of a developmental fashion. This was what I call a bragging document. What did we achieve? And we want this partnership to continue. So we were presenting very positive findings here. This is something that we use every month on this project. And we kind of reevaluate as a team how we're doing. And it leads us into this discussion of what could we maybe be doing better. And this is maybe just a take-home question at this point because we're out of time. What one thing could you do in the next 3 months to evaluate and or use evaluation findings? And there's a whole field out there called data visualization. But the bottom line is that we generally don't put much thought into the graphics that we create, whether it be a bar chart or a table or whatever. And look up Stephanie Evergreen. She has some short and sweet books on this topic as tons of references, so you can convince your boss or whoever that this is a good idea to change the way that we present data if they're set in this sort of, oh, we're a university, we have to do it this way. Well, if you want people to use it, understand it, and not feel stupid, which we don't want people to feel stupid, follow her advice. Oops, I keep going the wrong way. She has this thing called the Data Viz Checklist, which can be an easy way. And I'll end with that. I do have some handouts on our evaluation unit. If any of you have grants or whatever that you might be looking for an evaluator, you can come see me after.